everybody. Bill Buckmaster all fired up and ready to go. Our midweek edition of the Buckmaster Show. Tom Fairbanks is not only my friend, but he's my colleague on the other side. So much of a friend that we've got him on the other side of the glass in his own room where he engineers and produces the program.
And it was like this pre-COVID, and it will continue to be like this.
Yeah, it sure was. It's Wednesday, the 7th day of April, 2021. I almost said 21 years on the radio. No, 11 years on the radio, 22 on TV in this town before the radio. But we're in the radio biz here. We're in the Green Things Zocalo Village studio. Our radio station is 1030, Tucson's voice for trusted news talk. The call letters are KVOI, The Voice. We have our worldwide live listening on my website, buckmastershow.com. Not only can you hear the program live, but within an hour or two, maybe even three, of the conclusion of the program, we will have the podcast up for you. And then that archive keeps building, now over 10 years of content for you. Our live line is presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Let's utilize now the live line and go to our interview, our monthly interview with Ward 6 Democrat Tucson City Councilman Steve Kasacha. Councilman, how are you today?
Doing well. How are you doing, Bill?
Doing well. Let's begin with the top story in this town, which is the University of Arizona parted ways with head basketball coach Sean Miller. It was a 12-year run, a dozen years for Coach Miller. Was it overdue, Steve?
Well, we've kind of known this was going to be coming for the last few years when the investigations began. When you have an assistant coach sitting in federal prison for a while, when you have two other assistant coaches leaving with the clouds over their head, when you have an FBI investigation happening in the department, then, yeah, you kind of know. I mean, there's no way that you can avoid the charge of failure to control the program. I would say, though, that it goes beyond that. You know, Dave Hickey owns that whole series of incidents, in my opinion. There's already a part of the report that's out that shows that Dave Hickey was involved with working with his compliance officer in the department in diverting the being uncooperative with the investigation. That's not going to end well, and so, you know, Sean is one person, but you know, it all flows down, and if there is any fairness in this whole thing, then Dave Hickey probably needs to be parting ways with him too.
More about the university concerning the pandemic restrictions. Yes, colleges have been hit hard by pandemic restrictions. They've lost a lot of students. Many don't want to pay full price tuition for virtual learning. My question to you, we're seeing more and more schools now for the fall, coming up the fall semester 2021, that in order for a student, Steve Kasacek, to get back on campus and begin the new school year, they will need to show proof of vaccination. Would you like to see that at the University of Arizona?
Absolutely. And I had in my newsletter a couple of weeks ago, Rutgers is doing it. There are other schools around the country who are going to be doing it. This circles back to the whole conversation that I had beginning prior to the last fall semester, while we were seeing the summer surge here in Tucson, that the university leadership was not requiring off-campus testing, mandatory testing for students who lived off-campus. I went into some of those high-rises around campus and participated in the testing programs, and we verified that there were positivity rates north of 30% in some of them. One of the frat houses was at 80%, and the Pima County Health had to shut them down. The university at the time took the position that they took a few positions. Number one, that they did not have the authority to enter those buildings, which is true. The way I got in is I picked up the phone and called the managers and said, would you like us to give some testing and make it available to your tenants? And they welcomed us with open arms. The second thing the U of A said at the time was that mandatory testing is unconstitutional. Well, it's not. It's being done all over the country. And in fact, now the U of A seems to have figured out that constitutional question, and so they're doing mandatory testing for students who are coming on campus. As far as vaccinations are concerned, Bobby Robbins has mentioned it as something he would like to do. They absolutely need to do that. If you're inviting north of 30,000 students back into this community who are going to be living out in the community and participating in, you know, going to our, you know, restaurants and, you know, all the, you know, grocery stores and all that, I think it is absolutely incumbent on the U of A to be a responsible member of this, of the broader community, not just what happens within the perimeter of campus, which has been their focus, and understand that if you're going to invite them back in here, they need to be vaccinated, and you as an institution need to be a part of that bigger solution for this, for getting this COVID thing in the rearview mirror. So at 100%, I think that that's the direction they ought to go.
Yeah, they're talking about giving students $5 or something if they are vaccinated. Come on, I think we need to take a bigger step here, and let's make every student who steps foot on campus needs to be vaccinated.
I would say every student who comes back in the fall and participates, matriculates at this institution, whether it's virtually or on campus. I mean, I'm saying if they're living in the community, just as I said during the testing, it doesn't matter to me if they're taking their classes by computer from, you know, living over on Park Avenue or whatever. They're still out in the community. And so the U of A needs to understand that they 30,000 students wouldn't be here but for the invitation to come and take part in the classes. And if they're not fully back to in-person classes by the fall, then they need to broaden the net of what you just said. It's not just coming on campus. It's coming into the community to participate in classes.
Especially when we've got these variants still. They're already on the campus. We know that.
We know because we've done the wastewater testing that they're all over Pima County now. And last week, there's a test called the RT. It's the infectivity rate. And if the RT value is over 1, it means that we're seeing community spread again. Back in the fall, right after the U of A invited the students back in September, October, the RT was over 2. So that means that every person who was infected was infecting more than 2 other people. Right now, it's back over 1. Last week, it was 1.11. So that means we're back into a community spread situation. And that number that I gave, that's for the 85719 zip code. That's surrounding campus. So we know there's a situation again. We know, but just as you just said correctly, that the variant strains, plural, are on and around campus. They are more infectious, and so we have to make sure that the U of A gets it this time, that if you're inviting students back into this community, your responsibility is not simply for what happens within the perimeter of campus. Your responsibility is for what happens in the broader community, because they wouldn't be here if you hadn't brought them here.
Would this be something that would help if the council got on board and said it was unanimous of the council that we're urging this vaccination program before the fall?
What an interesting question, because it was I who asked the council last fall to pass a resolution that said we believe that the university should require testing of all students in the community. Bobby Robbins, the president of the university, made the rounds and talked to all the other council members except for me prior to that vote and said, hey, that would be a bad look for the university. It might hurt recruiting if people, you know, if the city is telling us, you know, what to do. And, oh, by the way, it's unconstitutional and it's pandering. That's what he called it. It is neither unconstitutional nor is it pandering, but because of the pressure that Bobby Robbins put on the council, they voted it down 6-1. I was the one. I would think that would be a wonderful idea. I just wonder what kind of full court press Robbins had put on again this time if he knew that we were considering such a resolution.
Will you?
I'd support it.
Will you introduce such a resolution?
I'll do a little bit of homework and see whether or not I've got any support from the council. But I think it's absolutely the responsible thing to do. And it, just as I believed it was the responsible thing to do when I proposed the mandatory testing. And by the way, a week after that vote failed, a week after Robbins did his full court press, they eliminated my position on campus. You connect the dots.
All right, we're going to pause right here because I want to talk about certainly this water situation. Being a resident of the foothills, I may be paying a lot more for my water, but we'll address that with Steve Kasachek. But right now, I want to talk about my favorite bakery in town, Steve, Mona's Danish Bakery. They do such a beautiful job up there with their Danish Kringle, with their coffee cakes, their really beautiful pastries. And here's some good news. The Help Wanted sign is now open up at Mona's. If you're looking for a great place to work, with wonderful people, please stop by Mona's, northeast corner of Swan and Sunrise. Just say you heard Bill Buckmaster talking on the radio about an opportunity to work at Mona's. They would be delighted to meet with you. And while you're there, maybe have some lunch and a wonderful pastry to go with it. Mona'sDanishBakery.com is the website, and they are open right now for lunch. We'll be right back with Steve Kasachek.
Here at Bon Voyage Travel, we encourage you to keep the travel spark alive by exploring the world through our weekly webinar series that includes inspiration and insight from some of the top leaders in the travel industry. When you're ready to plan your next adventure, know that Bon Voyage Travel will be here to advise and assist. Join us every Wednesday at 3 p.m. for a new virtual destination discovery. While we're apart, let's keep dreaming together. Visit bvtravel.com for more information.
This is Bill Buckmaster. You've heard me talk about choosing Tucson International Airport. While fewer people are traveling lately, our airport is doing even more these days to help ensure traveler health safety, including counter safety shields, physical distancing markers, enhanced cleaning, and more. It's called TUS Cares, and you can learn more at flytucson.com. These may be different times, but my priority remains to fly Tucson, Tucson International Airport.
Why is mining so important? It's the foundation of everything that defines a society. Everything you see is a product of mining. No matter when, no matter how, no matter why, every society on this planet has developed, grown, and modernized based solely on the minerals it could process. That, my friend, is why mining is so important.
Brought to you by the Southern Arizona Business Coalition.
A Citizens Advisory Committee of the Regional Transportation Authority is starting to review projects submitted by RTA member jurisdictions for consideration for the next RTA plan. The committee will consider plan goals and performance factors as they move into the selection process. The RTA will seek public feedback on the committee's draft plan when it is ready. Learn more about plan goals and sign up to stay informed at rtanext.com.
Vero Amore Restaurant in Plaza Palomino at Fort Lowland Swan and Dove Mountain in Marana are now open for limited in-restaurant and patio dining, along with takeout and home delivery. All of your favorite Vero Amore menu items, including Tucson's only certified authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza, are ready for you and your friends and family. More at veroamorepizza.com.
Southern Arizona is home to one of the world's most trusted sources of information on medicines. The Credible Meds website is visited each day by over 2,000 people from more than 60 countries. You too can learn how to personalize your medications and take control of your health care. Visit CredibleMeds.org today and join Bill Buckmaster each month as he and Dr. Ray Woosley, founder of Credible Meds, give you practical tips on how to get the most from your medications.
Vets working hard to save wildlife covered in cactus spines. A skunk left for dead, miraculously saved by a caring citizen. Those are just a couple of the headlines from the nonprofit Tucson Animal Rescue Center, where thousands of animals are cared for each year at its state-of-the-art Far East Side Tucson facility. Rescue, rehab, and release. The Tucson Wildlife Center, saving wildlife for more than two decades. Donate online at TucsonWildlife.com or call 290-WILD.
Back with you in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studios, the Buckmaster Show, where our live line is presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Steve Kasachek, Tucson City Councilman, Democrat, Ward Number 5, with us on the live line. If you're just joining us, the councilman is calling for the University of Arizona President, Dr. Robert Robbins, to mandate that the COVID-19 vaccine be required for any students who are going to be attending the University of Arizona in the fall. Now let's talk about the another big story, and that has to do with water. City of Tucson considering raising water rates for residents living in unincorporated Pima County. Should I start budgeting as a lower foothills resident? Should I start budgeting to pay more for the water bill from Tucson Water, Steve Kasachek?
Yeah, first of all, I'm not dodging it, but I think it's very cool that Mona's is actually hiring.
Yeah, I do too.
Because it means things are looking up a little bit for some of our small local businesses.
Yeah, I was there. Ann and I were having some breakfast on Easter morning, and Mona, Steve, the owner's wonderful daughter, was talking with me about that they were looking for some help. And I said, can I help by putting the word out on the radio? And they said, absolutely. This is a great place to work. Just use my name that Bill sent you, and let's talk. So, yeah, that is good news.
Yeah, it is good news. So, water. Right now, the city of Tucson is one of the only jurisdictions in the state that does not have a differential water rate between people who live in the city and people who live in an unincorporated area. The reason this is important is because the way the formula by which the state allocates state shared revenues, that are taxes that are generated here, flow to Phoenix, and then are sent back in this to our jurisdiction, is based on the percentage of the area that's incorporated. For instance, Maricopa County is something like 94% incorporated. They have a very small percentage of Maricopa County that is not even in some sort of incorporated area, whether it's Phoenix or Tempe or Scottsdale, whatever. The Pima County area is in the 60% range, which means that because we are so under-incorporated in this region, we're leaving north of $25 million in state-shared revenues on the table, tax dollars that begin here but never return here. So what we are considering, and this is going to go through a public process, it's not nothing's etched in stone yet, and the process will play out over the next 60 days or so, is to say, if you are in an unincorporated area, and that's not Oro Valley, it's not Marana, but it is Vail, for instance, because a couple of years ago, the residents of Vail voted to not incorporate in their area. If you're a part of an unincorporated area, then yes, you might be charged more if this passes for receiving City of Tucson water. How much that is yet to be determined. One of the proposals I would like us to consider is right now, if you're a Tucson Water customer in or out of the city, you're paying a tiered rate, and that is the lower amount of water that you use, the less you pay. For instance, if you use from 1 to 7 CCF, which is a fairly small water user, you're paying like $2.07. If then it goes up to over 3, and then up to over 8. I would like us to talk about sending a conservation message to customers, whether they're in or out of the community, to continue to conserve. And if you, for instance, if we passed say a 5% differential rate, you'd pay about $2 extra a month if you're in that lowest tier. The real goal, though, is not to put in place some confiscatory rate or anything like that. The goal is to get some more of the area incorporated. I don't know exactly where you live, but if you're in the foothills, mm-hmm. Catalina foothills, that's an unincorporated area. The reality is that many of those people are simply not going to annex into the city of Tucson because we have partisan elections. They don't want to be, unless they got their own council member. You know, a whole lot of different changes would have to be made the way we do politics in Tucson for Catalina Foothills to want to annex in. An alternative is simply to form the town of Catalina Foothills, something like Oro Valley, something like Marana. And with that, we would be receiving the state shared revenues that are right now being left on the table. So it's not a water war. It's more a revenue conversation, and not a revenue conversation for the city of Tucson, but for the region in general. And that's really the basis for the whole deal.
All right, let's get some feedback. Richard has sent me an email saying, will this really make folks move into Tucson? And he says,
No. No, that's not the point. But what I just said was, and he probably wrote that while I was saying it.
Yes.
Is that incorporation is the deal. So, no, I think that we're not going to get just a boatload of annexation as a result of this. But what we might get is people talk about incorporation. And when I talked to some of the people who live in Vail, for instance, a couple of years ago when they were considering it. And their point was, well, I mean, those who did not support it, was that we don't want, this layer of government and all that, about structure. Well, the reality is that you're paying Pima County to be your layer of government anyway, and you don't have a seat at the table necessarily, and you certainly are losing money. You're sending money to Phoenix. It's not coming back here. So I think there's a legitimate argument to be made for incorporation, but no, to his point, this is not going to be, Pima County is not going to become a large city of Tucson.
All right, let's go to Matt, who's been very patient. Matt, I've got about 5 minutes, so please, pretty quick question.
Well, briefly, just let me say that I respect that the council wants to talk about, the water situation and water rates. But I consider their proposal, the way they did it, as counting, putting everybody into, as Steve said, a water war between the city and the county, whether it was intended or
except
not.
Except I said it wasn't a water war, but go ahead, Matt.
No, and I, a lot, everything you've said are things we've talked about before. Your main rationale, you say, is to force them into incorporating to improve state shared revenues, which is something that isn't necessarily a bad thing and something also we've discussed about in the past. But using water to do it, I don't think is the right remedy. Have we ever considered, even if they did come to the city, how many more police would be required to service them, how many more fire police officers? We're already having trouble figuring that out in the budget as it is, and not to say it's a bad thing to look for in the future. Here's my specific question.
Please,
how many
quickly.
People will this affect in unincorporated Pima County? And does this require at some point the approval of the Arizona Commerce Commission? Thank you.
Okay. Bye. All right.
So I don't know the number of people. The arithmetic is real rough arithmetic. We have 1.1 million people in Pima County. About a half of that is in the city of Tucson. A small percentage is probably in the incorporated areas. And this is just really seat of the pants arithmetic. Maybe 300,000. I don't know. I mean, that's just I could be way off, but I'm just doing that right off the top of my head. This is not a commerce thing, but I will say this to Matt. It's not as though we don't have differential rates already being charged, whether it's for water or other things. And I'll give you two quick examples. Number one, and I don't want to get too far in the weeds, but number one, when we assume that people use about 60% of the water that you use goes into the wastewater system. If that happens within the city of Tucson, the city gets 90% credit for water credits for 90% of that. If it happens in Corona de Tucson or Abra Valley, we get zero. That has a value to it. Right now, reclaimed water sells for $700 per acre foot through the Central Arizona Groundwater Replenishment District. That's about $1.5 million that the city of Tucson is losing out on right now because the county gets all of those revenues, or at least the credits for the revenues. That's one example. Secondly, about a year and a half ago, 2 years ago, the county adopted a program called PAYGO. What that means is that through that program, the county is artificially keeping everybody's property taxes at a higher level than they would be if they had simply been paying down debt, and they're using the difference to fund road repair only in unincorporated Pima County. So City of Tucson residents are paying an inflated property tax right now to fund road repair out in the county. So it's not as though everything's on an equal plane already. And so our conversation about encouraging incorporation through a differential water rate is not some novel concept, because it's already happening in other ways.
Can we get this in real quickly, Steve? A quick response to my Facebook friend Ramon. He just sent me a message. If the water is not the issue to annex, are there some other ways to make that an incentive? Could you elaborate real quickly?
Well, every time that the city of Tucson goes out to try and annex people, we talk about the services that we do offer in the city of Tucson. But I don't want to discount the notion that water is important. I would argue that water is underpriced in this region generally. I mean, we are in a drought and we are in a desert, and we do see Lake Mead at 33% of its capacity.
Yeah, yeah.
And so, yeah, water is a big deal for this region, and climate is just not fake science.
All right, Steve Kasachek, thank you very much. Quickly, we are running out of time. I hope you have a great afternoon, Councilman. Thank you.
You too, Bill. Take care of yourself.
Thanks a lot. Steve Kasachek with us on the Buckmaster Show. More to come. And speaking of climate, we've got the guy to talk about it. Dr. Zach Guido is already with us on the live line. Lots to talk about. Buckmaster Midweek Edition. Be right back.
Green Things is a family-owned and operated plant nursery serving Tucson since 1970. Open daily at 3384 East River Road, Green Things is chock full of plants and pottery from around the world. Green Things is also now home to Zocalo, featuring fine Mexican and South American imports spread over five buildings on the 13-acre Green Things property. For more, visit greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
Have you ever imagined how your life would be without the modern conveniences you rely on every day? Everything you need depends entirely on products produced from mining. Without mining, think Stone Age. Your work commute might be a bit slower, but you could still have social media. Bathing shouldn't be a problem, but it won't be in a tub. So unless you're a caveman, you can see everything that enriches your life depends on the many miracles from mining. Brought to you by the Southern Arizona Business Coalition.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
Enjoy the majestic mountain views from the perfect for any season spacious patio at Tucson's original gastropub, Noble Hops in Oro Valley. Savor the view while sipping on locally brewed craft beer and enjoying gastropub fine fare. Order in or take out at Noble Hops, a pub for foodies, at West Lambert Lane at North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley, and on the web at noblehops.com.
Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100. As a small business owner, I appreciate the services of a top-notch certified public accountant. That's why Michael C. Flowers of Flowers, Rieger & Associates is the CPA firm of the Buckmaster Show. Michael's a former Small Business Leader of the Year in Tucson. He'll professionally handle all of your accounting needs and tax preparation services. Flowers, Rieger & Associates, 6125 East Grant Road, and on the web, flowersrieger.com. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is once again welcoming guests to the gallery. Stop by or call ahead for a one-on-one appointment or even a virtual design session. Come by Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, located at the southwest corner of Fort Lowell and Dodge. The number is 795-8226 and on the web at moesgallery.com. Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show midweek edition, rounding out the first full week of April already. And Buckmaster in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studio, Green Things, the place to go in the Tucson area and southern Arizona for everything green. There are 13 acres just chock full of amazing plants. And who doesn't want some beautiful things in their garden this spring? And go buy Green Things. And when you do, ask about something that will survive this unusually hot spring that we're having and well into summer, something that's going to bloom for you. They'll have the answers at 3384 East River Road. The website, greenthingsaz.com. They're open daily. And don't forget about Zocalo Village and all the great handmade furniture over there, much of it from Latin America. Beautiful things. That website is zocalovillage.com. Let's bring in now on our live line, which is presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management, Dr. Zach Guido. Zach is the Buckmaster Show contributor on climate. He is the program manager and research scientist for the University of Arizona's International Research and Applications Program and a research affiliate at the Climate Assessment for the Southwest at the University of Arizona Institute of the Environment. Zach, how are you?
Hi, Bill. Thanks for having me. I'm doing well.
Well, I'm glad you are. I'm a little bit concerned after going through the report that you and your colleagues put out at the University of Arizona, your Southwest Climate Outlook. I'm telling you, Zach Guido, this feels kind of eerie. It feels a lot like what we went through last year. We're off to the hottest start ever to an April. It's bone dry, and I hope it's not deja vu, Zach Guido.
Boy, I hope you're right. I mean, we haven't been putting out a lot of good news when it comes to the climate over the last year for recently. I mean, you know, we came out of the historically dry monsoon season and right into a pretty darn dry winter season across the West, and actually across many parts of the West. So, yeah, I think we're hopeful that the fortunes will turn around, and we do actually have a reversal and don't repeat a pretty dry monsoon like we did last year. So I'm optimistic. At the very least, Bill, I'd say at this moment we don't know one way or the other what's in front of us in the monsoon season, and that gives me optimism.
Well, I got out the old red pen here to underline a couple of items in the Southwest Climate Outlook, your climate summary, Zach, that you and your colleagues put out. Here are a couple of things that really have me concerned. First of all, we are in at what's called a D4 in the Southwest. Mm-hmm. That is, when you're in a D4, that is the highest drought category. It's called exceptional drought. And right. From what I see from this report, Zach, in Arizona and our friends over in New Mexico, half, 50% of the region is D4. Over 80% is in at least D3, which is extreme drought. That makes me very concerned.
Yeah. And you're referring to the U.S. Drought Monitor, which has this relatively involved effort to try to characterize drought, which is not an easy thing to think about or to depict on a map, because, as you know, you and I have talked about before on this show, it's really a matter of time scale in which you're looking at. So you can develop these short-term drought conditions that where grasses dry up really quickly in a matter of months, or when we turn our attention to the water supply, we think a bit more in terms of multiple years, even a decades long drought, dry conditions, below average conditions can create drought. But you're right. When you look at the U.S. Drought Monitor, we're probably at a worse position than we've been since the early 2000s. And we have to take that with a little bit of a grain of salt when we look at these maps and try to compare them over time, because they're done with some expert input and the people that are developing them change. So in terms of comparing to the long term, it's a little bit more problematic. But certainly when we look at the last year, we have not had a drier, speaking about southern and southeastern Arizona in particular, we have not had a drier monsoon season followed by a winter wet season than we have this year. So if you go back 100 years, a little bit more of data, this is in fact the driest consecutive monsoon and winter in a row. And yeah, we went into the winter in drought conditions, in extreme drought, which is the second highest drought category. And we've come out of this winter with exceptional drought, as you mentioned, which is roughly defined as about a sort of 1 in 50 year drought. And we come out of this winter with, like you said, 50% of the Southwest, Arizona, New Mexico, and a little bit more actually in just looking at Arizona, in that highest category. So we are, yeah, we're going into the fire season, not in a very good situation. And so one would expect fire risk to really sort of ramp up before the monsoon season starts.
Yeah, and then this news broke yesterday. I forwarded the news release to you, and hopefully you saw this, about a new study from, again, your colleagues, researchers at the University of Arizona. These folks are over at the College of Agriculture and Life Sciences, partnering with the USDA Agricultural Research Service. Bottom line from the co-senior author, William Smith, who is an assistant professor at the UA School of Natural Resources in the Environment. Here's just a quote from Dr. Smith, who we've booked to be on the show here in a couple of weeks. But he says, in the West, Zach Guido, total annual rainfall has decreased by about 4 inches since the 1970s. That's the average longest dry period has increased by roughly 50% from 20 to 32 days.
Yeah, I did read that paper. It is a nice paper. I know the author, so there's a little bias here. It's in a really good journal, so it was vetted quite well. And what I took from this, I took a couple things from this. That point that you made is obviously in the data. It's there. We have a fixation, I think, in the climate world, and actually in media and broadly speaking, to try to summarize complicated things into, simple measures like an annual total or a seasonal total. And what I really liked about this paper was it got away from that, and it was asking questions about, well, what's changing in the characteristics of the precipitation? So not just the monsoon total or the winter season total or the annual total, but like, is the length of dry periods changing, or is the variability of those lengths of dry periods changing? And that, I think, is a more nuanced way to try to understand what we're observing. And basically the outcomes of the paper was that we are seeing, broadly speaking, in a record that, begins at 1976 through 2019. I'll talk a little bit about that in a minute. That the dry periods, these dry spells, the length of them are increasing, and the variation, interannual variation of those lengths are increasing as well. And so their conclusions was that the not only are we getting warmer, but the characteristics of rainfall are changing in a way that's reinforcing that that warming effect and the sort of drought effect. I'd say this as a point of caution, and when you have a more in-depth conversation with the lead author, William Smith, it'd be something to talk to him about. But you know, it is a period that only goes back about 44, 45 years, and that's entirely because that's when these daily datas, these station datas, are available. So it's not cherry picking the data at all. It's just by the fact of what we've observed at that sort of temporal resolution. But it is a 45 year period, and those characteristics are there, the trends are there as they report in the data. But the question is, well, is this a climate change signal, or is it just natural variability? And I think that is an open-ended question, although in the paper they lean a little bit toward climate change, but there's real no unpacking of the mechanisms that's driving these change. So I really like the paper. I think it focuses our attention on more nuances of the climate that matter. And then I think that there's a lot of work to be done to figure out if what's driving it, and whether or not it's climate variability. That's something like the El Nino Southern Oscillation, caused in part by that, or these decadal trends that are driven by oceanic circulation, or if it's a secular climate change that's driving it.
All right, we're going to talk more about climate with Dr. Zach Guido after we take the break. It's Buckmaster, the midweek edition in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studios. We'll be right back.
Reed Park Zoo is now open for wildlife walks, a modified guest experience, prioritizing social distancing and safety. To find out more about all the changes and the new safety precautions now in place, visit reedparkzoo.org. The community-approved 10-year master plan ensures that your zoo's future is brighter than ever before. We've missed you, and so have the animals. They're waiting to welcome you back to the Reed Park Zoo.
Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com.
Hello, I'm Danette Bewley, President and CEO of the Tucson Airport Authority, with news of our new effort to ensure air traveler safety and security going through our terminal. It's called TUS Cares, and you can read more about it on our website, flytucson.com. As you carefully weigh your decision to fly, I want you to know whether it's next week, next month, or next year, we are here for you at Tucson International Airport. Thank you.
The Regional Transportation Authority plan is funded by a voter-approved half-cent sales tax, which expires in June 2026. To prepare for ongoing project delivery, the RTA board established a Citizens Advisory Committee to select projects for a new draft plan. The committee will help identify which projects to invest in to best meet regional transportation needs. Learn more about plan development and provide early input at rtanext.com.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and penal politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
Hi, this is Pam Krim, CEO of the Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona, where we set the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the place to turn for objective and unbiased information on businesses. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona at bbb.org/Tucson.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show. Lots of content in our noon hour today. This portion of the program presented by Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico. I'm so excited that New Mexico is once again open to out-of-state visitors. The green light is there. You can jump in the car and take the three-hour drive to a lovely area of the Southwest. They were very tight during the COVID time with their restrictions. But I will tell you this, New Mexico leads the country in getting vaccine in the arms of the residents of their state. So they're doing something right over there, and they are ready now to welcome you back, to check out where to stay and what to do, and you're not going to have any shortage of things to do. Visit southwestnewmexico.org. Let's continue now our conversation with Dr. Zach Guido. Zach is our contributor on climate. He is the program manager and research scientist at the UA's International Research and Applications Program. He's also involved with the climate assessment for the Southwest at the University of Arizona Institute of the Environment. And getting back to the way we started this interview, I've still got some, had the red pen out and underlined a few more things from your latest newsletter. And I want to turn now to the snowpack and water supply, which is really important. And I also began our interview, Zach, by talking about there's an eerie familiarity to what we are seeing right now with our weather, to what we saw a year ago. But here's the thing that jumped out at me. Most of the reservoirs in our region are at or below the values, the water levels that were recorded at this time last year. And that's not what we needed for the winter season.
No, it's not. Yeah, and it seems like, you know, every year when you look at those reservoirs, they're at pretty low levels. And, you know, it's been like that because we're using quite a bit of water, and we're not getting a series of wet years in a row to replenish them. You know, and a few other things that I think are important to note, even when we have relatively average, or let's say we have average rain and snowfall over the winter period, we're not getting average runoff. So, and that's because the heat and the dry soils and the evaporation that's occurring makes it so that we actually need above average wintertime precipitation to drive just average stream flows. And so in a year like this, where there's been below average for many parts of the West, even to our north and Utah and Colorado, you know, it makes it so that the stream flows are even lower than average. I think like the flow in the expected flow over the up until up until June for the Colorado River will be somewhere around 50% of average. So that's not a good situation for the Colorado. So we're going to see declining reservoir levels for those big reservoirs on the Colorado. Same thing with the Rio Grande. You know, right just north of Albuquerque at one of the measuring stations, it's, you know, the Rio Grande is somewhere in the vicinity of 23% of average for the stream flow this year. So, you know, the people that draw water, you know, the irrigators on the Rio Grande are, you know, going to be conserving water this year as they have been in the past. And it's also worth noting that basically the winter is the peak snowpack is like April 1 for the northern part of the Colorado River Basin. And it's March 1 for parts in Arizona and New Mexico. So we're already past the peak of the snowpack. And so we have a really good handle on how much water is actually going to flow in the rivers. And so this picture isn't going to change that much. And so again, you know, we're going to be in a pretty low stream flow situation and probably have to look for to next winter before that really changes.
And then the situation
at all.
Excuse me, Zach. The situation in California is not looking great. As we all know, they had a historic four-year period, 2012 to 2016, a terrible drought. The snowpack in the Sierra Nevada is about 61% of the historical average. So they may be looking at a situation where they will have to go back to water rationing again.
Yeah, it was. You have to go far north into Washington and northern Idaho and parts of northern Wyoming to get above average snowpack, and that's in part driven by the fact that we had a La Nina this year, which has a tendency of causing the position of the jet stream to be more northerly, and so there's just. We basically lop off a few storms down and that come into, you know, southern parts of the western U.S. and cause a few more storms in the northern parts. So the low snowpack around the southwest, California, you know, Colorado, Utah, Arizona, New Mexico is not unrelated to the fact that we had cooler conditions in the tropical Pacific Oceans defined by La Nina. So it's unclear what natural variability El Nino or La Nina will be next year, but it will certainly have some sort of an influence likely for next year as well.
All right, and now let's go back to your newsletter about the future. And of course, this is always very difficult to predict. The 3-month outlook for April through June, which would normally take us up to hopefully a normal monsoon season. This is kind of what they call over in India, kind of the monsoon turnaround. This is the area where it gets really, really dry anyway and hot. June is really a hot, dry month here anyway. But according to what you're seeing, we're looking at below normal precipitation across most of our drought plague Southwest.
Yeah, and I think like those seasonal forecasts for this particular period are not that useful only because it very rarely rains. And so I could, without even running a computer model or like having any sort of understanding of climate dynamics, I could probably guess that it's going to be above average temperature just because, you know, we're in this long-term trend and that it's going to be right around normal rain, if you will. But right around normal rain is basically
nothing.
No rain.
So,
So yeah, it's going to be dry and hot, right? But I think the question then is a little bit further out to 3 months, like what's the monsoon going to do?
Yep.
And I'm not quite, the science isn't there. I mean, people have theories about, do we have some insight or some, can we look for some clues in the landscape that might suggest that the monsoon will start early and there's some sort of relationships between low snowpack and an early onset of the monsoon, and that's driven because the land surface heats up a little bit more and quicker and allows the sort of monsoon ridge to set in and allow for the incursion of moist air from the south. Like, there is that hint out there, and it, actually if you look out in those seasonal forecasts to the June, July, and August period, the Climate Prediction Center from NOAA, who makes these official forecasts, is sort of leaning toward an earlier onset of the monsoon. But boy, I think they're out on a limb there. And like, it's not something that you can hang your hat on at this stage. In fact, the forecasting of the monsoon is one of the more challenging forecasting problems there is. So I'm hopeful that comes true, but I'm not sleeping on it, I guess.
All right, Zach, we're going to wrap it up with you. Just one quick question. Folks are always wondering about La Nina and El Nino. Are we into a in-between period, or I'm about out of time quickly?
Yeah, it's a transition period. So we're sort of in the waning stages of the La Nina, and then it's a hard part in the year to forecast what it's going to be. Normally, an El Nino or La Nina takes shape in the late summer, early fall, and so we have a few more months to really nail down what's going to happen then.
All right, Zach, we will look forward to your next visit. Hopefully you'll be back with us in studio. Have a great day. Thanks, Zach.
Thank you. All right.
Dr. Zach Guido with us on the Buckmaster Show. Lots to talk about. A lot of content in this hour today. Steve Kasacek and then Dr. Zach Guido. And at the center of the conversation was water and is water. That'll do it for the Buckmaster Show Midweek Edition. I'm Bill Buckmaster on behalf of my friend Tom Fairbanks. We've got Dave Ramsey. That's a fun show coming up at 104. Have a great afternoon, everybody.